Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
Lethal simplicity. Yeah, I like to score fast. It's hard not to be a Noles fan. Get Florida State back. I want a damn good defense. We're still undefeated. Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Once again, this podcast is brought to you by Luis Marquez from Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville and by Resolution Home Loans. If you have any need for real estate in the state of Florida, you get in touch with either one of these, with both of these parties, and you'll be well off. I'll go ahead and talk a little bit more about them later in the show. But we got a big mailbag for today. Lots of questions have come in, and some I've put off for quite a while. You'll probably see why, but no reason really to belabor the point. I'm just going to go ahead and get right to it. So first question. This is from France Louise May. Louis May. I'm sorry if I butchered that. Correct me. Next time you send me a note, let me know how to pronounce that. But this is from France on Twitter. Hypothetical. How would this season and this recruiting class have turned out if Jimbo had left for LSU and Taggart had come in 2017? It's a really interesting question. I think this recruiting class, this season's recruiting class, the 2018 recruiting class, would have been a little bit better than it was. It would have, it probably would have finished in the top five, and some of the players, maybe even a Justin Fields type, would have been more in the cards in this class, because Taggart and that group just didn't have enough time, especially given the early signing period. It was much harder with an early signing period for a new staff to put together an elite level class. It's just not an easy thing. And if they'd been able to get more time, then I think this class would have been really terrific. And you're already seeing on the 2018 or on the 2019 cycle, they're already hitting the ground and starting to catch up very quickly. And that 2019 class looks like it's going to shape up really, really well. So I think the 2018 class would have probably been, like I said, about top five. I don't think they would have been the top class in the country. I think Georgia was going to get that this year no matter what. They fully committed to getting that this year, and they were going to get that. I don't think that that they would have been probably above maybe Ohio State, but they'd have been in somewhere in the 3 to 5 range, I think, and there would have been a few players that they didn't get that they would have been more in the game for, especially some of those early guys, maybe a Channing Tindall, somebody like that from the linebacker from South Carolina. There are a few guys that they would have, I think, been able to pull in that they just weren't, because some of those guys were off the market by the time they took over, effectively. But there's a flip side to this, and it wasn't asked in the question, but it needs to be considered as the other side to this question, which is, I think the 2017 class would have been considerably worse than the one that Jimbo Fisher and that coaching staff brought in 2017. So I think the 2018 class would have been better, but in 2017, I don't think they would have landed Cam Akers. I'm almost entirely certain that they wouldn't have gotten Marvin Wilson. I think Hamza Nasiruddin probably not in that class as well. Yeah, they would have probably landed one or two that Fisher and that group didn't land. But that's three, and then if you throw Josh Kando in there, who also would have been, I think, an up in the air guy. I'm not sure they would have landed him. That's four of the five guys in that 2017 class that I had rated as an impact player. So, again, you don't land Cam Akers, you don't land Marvin Wilson in that 2017 class, and it looks very, very different. You don't land Nasiruddin in that 2017 class, it looks pretty different. So all that said, I think things went about as well as you could expect given a coaching change. And I do think that, again, the timing relative to the early signing period was a problem. But especially given that, things went about as well as they could go. And they managed, again, as I mentioned on the last podcast, they managed to land a number of players that project to be solid foundational players in the program. They didn't bring in a bunch of stiffs. And so that's a key thing. And again, in the 2017 class, that class has a lot of top-heavy elite talent in that class that I think is it supplements. Again, what you really need to do in recruiting, and I talked about this last year, what you have to do in recruiting is you cannot look at one class at a time. You have to look at 2 and 3 year hauls, because really what you're always trying to do is balance your 2 year haul class. So combine the two classes of the last 2 years and look to see where you have, are there any weaknesses? Is there a lack of depth? Did you not get enough numbers at a position? Did you not get high shelf talent at a position? That's where you end up getting in trouble. But you have to look at things on a 2 year rolling basis. And so when you look at the last two classes, they mesh together pretty well. And that's what matters, I think, more than anything, is that they managed to supplement what was already on the roster. And there's a ton of talent on the roster. I'm already hearing from the staff, as they've observed some things in workouts and so on, they believe that this team can make the playoff. They're already whispering about, like, we got more talent than we thought we did. We got more talent than we thought we might. This is a team that can contend for the playoff. I don't know how this team only won 6 games. So they think that they could turn into that. Now, that's going to require a whole lot. I mean, again, Clemson with the defensive line that they're returning, that's a problem. There's a lot of issues that they've got to work through. They've got to make sure that they get consistency at the quarterback position. They've got to get settled up front and replace a couple of guys on the offensive line and really bring stability there. They've got to find some depth at linebacker, which, it's a thin position. They've got to stay healthy at wide receiver and get some contributions from some young wide receivers, which is never something you want to bet on. So there are some things that would have to go right, but the talent there's no questioning the talent on the roster. And this class is really about supplementing the 2017 class, which was as talented as any. I mean, that was up there with the class, any as good as just about any class Jimbo Fisher ever brought in. And that followed on the 2016 class, which was just about as good as any class he'd brought in as well. So I think that basically answers it as best I can. So like I said, I think the 2018 class, probably a top 5 class. I think that 2017 class probably slides 5 or 10 the other direction. So it ends up being largely a wash. Though, again, some of the guys they landed in 2017, there weren't guys like that in the 2018 class. There was not a Cam Akers in the 2018 class. Closest thing was Zamir White, who went to Georgia, and he's coming off a torn ACL in his senior year of high school. There was no Marvin Wilson in the 2018 class. It was a weak defensive tackle class. So it was so important that Florida State loaded up on the defensive tackle side in the 2017 class. And again, those are the sorts of things that you really have to be aware of. You got to recruit with an eye toward the next class. And they did a good job of that in terms of getting guys that, there weren't guys like those guys in the 2018 class. And then in the 2018 class, they did land. I think they landed some guys that there weren't guys like that in the 2017 class. I don't think there was a Jordan Young or a Harrison that they could have conceivably landed in the 2017 class. So it combines really well. All right, next one, I think I've already answered it, but it's still on the list, so I'll answer it again. Which lineman do you think will benefit most from the coaching/scheme change? So first things first is the scheme itself is not going to change a ton in the running game. They're not changing a bunch, so they're still going to run. Jimbo Fisher and Rick Trickett and that group ran a lot of gap blocking the last 3 years. Ran a ton of it. So, a lot of people will tell you that, they just ran a lot of zone. Yeah, they ran zone, but so is Willie Taggart. He's going to run a lot of zone. Now, he runs more inside zone than outside zone from what I've seen, but he's still going to run a good bit of zone. Everybody runs zone. And that's going to be a base. It's going to be a staple of his offense. And Jimbo ran a lot of power, a lot of counter draw, a lot of counter tray. Those were where most of the big plays came from in the last few years, both with Dalvin Cook and Cam Akers. So they're going to be doing a lot of the same stuff schematically. Now, one difference, though, is, and this has stood out in watching what Taggart does up front. And it's more like what Jim Harbaugh does up front. Again, it's the tree he's falling off of here. He's close to that tree, or branching off of, I guess, is they do more to help their interior linemen, generally speaking, in the run game, and particularly the center. I think, so Jimbo Fisher's offense overall put a lot of pressure on the center. You need to have a stud center in Jimbo's system. If you're going to have a great offense, a lot of people point to the quarterback position in Jimbo's system. Jimbo's system is very quarterback friendly. It's built to make a quarterback look good. Jimbo was a quarterback, and that's what he prioritizes, is making things easier and more quarterback friendly in his offense. I was talking with one of the former GAs under Fisher not that long ago, who was talking about, you know, it's not that difficult for a quarterback in Jimbo's system. It's so quarterback friendly. But that's not true of the center in Jimbo's system. And if you look at when Jimbo had his best years offensively, it was when he had his best, healthiest centers at that position. Brian Stork in 2013. Look at the difference in the first half of first half of 2014 with Cam Irving in the second half. Just a massive difference. Look at how much of a difference it made with the injuries that Alec Eberle had to deal with, and how much difficulty that caused up front from the center position. It makes a difference. You've got to have a stud center to really run that offense to perfection, because they don't like to combo block a ton. They don't help the center very much against that zero technique, against that one technique. So if you've got a war daddy defensive tackle in there, that center is going to have a really hard time all game. And from what I've seen, Taggart and his staff are more willing to combo block, have the guards help that center with that defensive tackle initially before going to the second level. And again, the difference here, as I'm sure I've addressed this in the past, the difference here is that in Fisher's system, they're trying to get to that second level. They're willing to take a few losses in order to potentially hit a really big one, because you get that guard to the second level quicker. What Taggart's doing there is he's trying to make sure when he's running the ball, he wants to get a gain. Maybe you don't bust that one quite as often, but you're not going to have as many losses. So I think that's the guy that's going to benefit the most. Whoever's at center, I think it's going to be Eberle this next year, but the center is going to look a lot better in this system. And I do think the tackles will have a little bit of help as well, because they'll get rid of the football a little quicker than was the case in Fisher's system for the most part. All right, next question. Cameron Smith asks, could you go over some quarterbacks that Florida State could potentially get committed or have a shot at for 2019? Then some others. What 2019 quarterbacks do you like so far? Then another, Jaden Daniels or Tyson Fomachen, better for which is the better fit for Willie Taggart's offense? Which quarterback would be your quarterback one? So a lot of questions about these, about quarterbacks for the next cycle, and there should be, because Florida State whiffed on quarterback in the 2018 class. So they need to land at least one, and that guy needs to be a stud. So yeah, I got asked about a couple different quarterbacks and about which quarterback fits Taggart's system best. So I want to answer the first one, or the second one first, in terms of fitting Taggart's system. And I've gotten the impression from a lot of fans and a lot of the questions that I've gotten, and I've seen this also in terms of some other outlets, the way that they've talked about this or written about this sort of thing, that Taggart's going to be looking for something radically different. There's going to be some difference in what Taggart's looking for at the quarterback position compared to Jimbo Fisher. And honestly, that's just not true. They're looking for very similar traits and similar characteristics at the quarterback position to what Jimbo Fisher did. And that's why, when it came down to it, they ended up recruiting hard after the same guy in the 2018 class, James Foster. What they want is and again, you go down the priority list. This was true for Jimbo, and it's going to be true for Willie Taggart, because a lot of what they're asking their quarterbacks to do isn't all that different. What they want is they want a quarterback who first and foremost makes good and quick decisions. So one of the things that Taggart's staff does at first when they look at a quarterback's stats in high school is they immediately go to the interceptions column. If the interceptions column is a little higher, they get a little wary, because what they say is, that interceptions at any level tell you about a kid's decision-making. Completion percentage can tell you about a kid's accuracy, though you need to see what kind of throws the kid's making. But they need to, they want to see whether the kid's throwing a lot of interceptions. They, in their view, if a kid's throwing a lot of interceptions at the high school level, he's probably going to throw them at the college level. And you can extend that. So they're going to look at the kids. Their first priority is decision making and whether this kid can be a leader on this team, whether he's one of those kids that can that has the traits to run a team. The next thing that they're looking for is a kid that can throw the ball downfield with accuracy. Again, making those quick and good decisions, that's trait number one. The next thing is, can this kid make the throws downfield with accuracy? And ideally do so without a whole lot of effort. You're looking for a kid, the ball comes off his hand really naturally, who can just push the ball downfield without any effort. That's what you're looking for. So they're looking for a passer, first and foremost, who makes good decisions. And again, you can throw the ball all over the field with. That's what they're looking for. And if they can find those two things, that kid's on their board. And grades and character and all that is also on there. Down below that, the next thing that you look for is, if you have all those other traits, now you say, okay, now mobility's a plus. If the kid can move, if the kid can run, now he's an even bigger plus. But again, the other stuff comes first, and the other stuff is the sine qua non. You have to have that stuff in order for the kid to be considered. They're not looking for Quentin Flowers. Quentin Flowers would not play quarterback at Florida State in Willie Taggart's offense, because they can get better than Quentin Flowers at Florida State. If you go back and you watch the 2016 USF film, Flowers left a ton of big plays, touchdowns, big plays on the field, because he missed him or just couldn't hit him. And, you know, he didn't read him, or he just couldn't hit him in terms of accuracy. And they've been very clear, we're looking to run a lot of what we did in terms of USF schematically, but with much more emphasis on throwing the football and throwing it with accuracy. That's what you're going to get. So that's, when you're talking about fit, that sounds like what Jimbo Fisher wants in a quarterback. He wants good decision-making first and foremost, a kid that can make all the throws and throw accurately without a whole lot of effort downfield, and then mobility is a plus. If you've got a guy that adds mobility, then there you go. EJ Manuel, that sort of quarterback who has the frame, the arm, all of these things, that's a lot of what you're looking for. Though you want to, ideally you have Jameis Winston with EJ Manuel's legs. And then say Lamar Jackson's legs would be even better, and Lamar Jackson's willingness to run. In any case, I've looked at some stuff in the 2019 class, and my rankings of how I stack the board for guys that I think Florida State's going to continue to recruit and go after, I have Jaden Daniels, kid from San Bernardino, California, number one on my board. I think Daniels is the best player. They have the best quarterback I've seen so far that would fit really well with what they want to do. There are some similarities in terms of his movement skills. He's not as explosive, and it's unfair to make this comparison, but I'm going to do it anyway. He reminds me a little bit of Lamar Jackson in terms of how easily he's able to flick the football downfield. He doesn't have quite as big an arm as Jackson, but I think he's got more touch. But the ball comes off really effortlessly. He can throw it deep. He can throw it short. He can make all the throws. And then he can really drive the ball downfield. And then he also is an excellent runner. Again, he's not as explosive as Lamar Jackson. Another decent comparison would be a guy like Marcus Mariota. It's really that those are the kinds of guys that you're looking at with Jaden Daniels, and those are the kinds of guys you want in any college offense. So Daniels to me is a clear number one on the board, but again, you're asking a kid to come all the way across the country, and there's a lot of programs that are going to be on him very, very hard there. So you can't count on him as necessarily coming, but they have a good relationship with him, and they're going to continue to recruit him. The next on my board would be Grant Gunnell, the quarterback who just decommitted from Texas A&M. He's Jimbo Fisher's top target, 6'6", 215 kid from Houston. Is he, you know, does he provide the running ability that you ideally would want? No, he lacks that dual threat ability that Jaden Daniels does, But you can be, again, Taggart's offense is not going to run the quarterback a ton. He's not running Urban Meyer's offense. You're not gonna, he's not gonna run the quarterback 20 times in a game in order to and grind that guy up. He's gonna run the quarterback selectively and really only to make sure that that defense has to account for him. Now, if the defense refuses to account for him, he'll run him a little bit more. And if the quarterback can really run, then that becomes a real threat. And then the defense has to account for him, and then you start handing it off. So again, it's more about forcing the defense to account for a guy than it is having a guy that you run a ton. But Gunnell, I think, could do that well enough. And again, he's got a good enough arm and other things that he would be number two on my board. Number three on my board would be Michael Johnson, Jr., the son of actually Taggart's assistant coach out at Oregon, who stayed behind, kid from Eugene, obviously. I don't think they have a real chance at getting him. I think he's going to wind up at Oregon with his dad, but he would be third on my board. So those two guys, I don't think they're going to get Gunnell. I don't think they're going to get Michael Johnson. But again, those are two guys that I would have on my board just a little bit above them. The number two guy that I think is really realistic on the board is Tyson Fomachan. I think Fomachan is he reminds me so much when you watch his high school stuff. He is a clone of EJ Manuel in terms of physical tools, in terms of his presence, even the way he spins out of sacks and so on in the backfield, the way his throwing motion so much reminds me of EJ Manuel that it's just uncanny. I mean, it is uncanny. It's like you cloned 19-year-old EJ Manuel and made him a rising high school senior. He, again, is a guy that I think can make the necessary throws in Taggart's offense. You know, EJ Manuel's a kid that he's a guy that made the, he was a first round NFL draft pick. Should he have been a first rounder? That's another question, but he was good enough to be a first rounder and certainly had first round tools, which is why he got drafted there and led Florida State to a 12-2 season. That guy, listen, if you could guarantee me EJ Manuel in Willie Taggart's offense the next 3 years, I'd take it in a heartbeat. Especially since I think they'd be able to convince EJ to run a little bit. EJ, by the time he was a senior with Jimbo, he just refused to run. He just, even on zone read stuff, he would just hand it off. If he's willing to use his legs, then all of a sudden you've got a real weapon. And Fomachan seems very willing to do that. So Fomachan, I think, is going to be a good prospect. And like I said, reminds me a lot of EJ Manuel. A lot of Florida State fans will hear that and cringe. I don't understand that really. I mean, EJ had limitations. His biggest limitations were in terms of anticipation. And I haven't seen enough from Fomachan to know whether or not he has that limitation. But physically, everything else reminds me of EJ Manuel. And if that's the case, that's a pretty good prospect. And I actually think Florida State's probably going to get him. So, you know, I think Daniels is going to be a bit of an uphill climb because of location. Fomachan is a kid that Walt Bell was the first guy to offer him. He and Walt Bell have a good relationship. He fits very well in terms of what they want to do offensively. I think they're probably going to get him. And then below him, I'd have Sam Howell, the kid from North Carolina. There's some other quarterbacks out there that I think will end up moving up the board a little bit as evaluation periods go on. But Daniels and Fomachan would be my two that I think they have a real chance at, that I'd pull out all the stops on. And, you know, if you could get both of them, great. I don't think you can get both of them, but I'd take one of those guys and feel pretty good about it, and then try to get one other one that may be more of a developmental guy. So I think that's basically how I'd weight the board. Now, before we continue, I want to go ahead and remind you that this podcast is brought to you by Resolution Home Loans. Definitely want to talk to Chad and Shannon if you have any need for any mortgage, any real estate purchase that you're considering. Talk to those guys. Listen, they reached out to me back in December. They mentioned that they naturally pair with the sponsorship of Luis Marquez. And I didn't want to accept sponsorship from just anybody, so I took some time to look into these guys, and I'm telling you, they are quality. This is what these are the kinds of people you want to work with. You want to go through their Almost Home program. That's what really sets them apart. They'll guarantee that you'll close within 15 days or the contract closing date, or they'll give you $500 off your closing costs. That's elite, seminal closing speed. give them a call at 844-FSU-LOAN. That's a number set up specifically for Florida State fans who want to deal directly with Chad or Shannon. Or you can visit fsuhomeloans.com. Let them know that you heard about them through the Unconquered podcast and you'll get additional perks. It'll obviously help me out a lot. So if you do wind up closing with them, go ahead and tweet your success story with the Unconquered podcast hashtag, or you can post it on the Unconquered podcast Facebook page. And if you do so, I will throw in a free item of your choice from the growing Unconquered podcast shop. All right, next question. Which wide receiver from this class do you think makes the biggest impact in year one? Now, I addressed that a little bit in the last podcast, but and I've kicked that around a bunch even since then. And I still think it's probably Harrison, partly because of how much I've heard about his character and how intelligent he is. Coaching staff just believes he is just the total package in terms of maturity and everything else. So, and also I think he's one of those guys that's going to be a weapon on jet sweeps and so on. So he's probably your best bet because he could probably get on the field in the slot and do some of those things in the run game and be a little bit of a Swiss Army knife. Probably also make some impact, potentially make some impact on special teams. Very much could be that guy, you know, but I think the other thing is Jordan Young has all the tools to be one of those guys that comes out and splashes in year one. Now, unless they have an injury from one of the older guys, you're still not expecting one of these guys to start. You're still not expecting one of these guys to go, say, over 20 receptions on the year. You get receptions in the, you know, in the teens somewhere with these guys, and you've done really well. But again, I think those two guys are probably going to make the biggest impact. And then, you know, a short bit behind them, you're going to have the third highest impact there from Warren Thompson, who, again, big body, somebody that they could use in that wide receiver screen game as a blocker and in some other ways. So, you know, you got three guys, I think, right there that are more ready to contribute day one than anybody that they've recruited at the position in quite a while. And certainly guys who combine a high ceiling and the ability to contribute early better than anybody that they've recruited in a while. All right, next question. Let's see. This is from Jake Harville. Wonder why Foster would go to Texas A&M over FSU. Did Jimbo promise immediate playing time? I can answer that one immediately. No. Also, do you think Francois is the starter next year? Okay, so first and foremost, Jimbo did not promise him immediate playing time. But there was a longer standing relationship there. And ultimately there was more trust between Jimbo and Foster and Foster's family than there was between Willie Taggart and Walt Bell and Foster's family. That was a big factor in all that. And I think also the depth chart was a factor in terms of there's a quicker path to being on the field for Foster, more likely at least at Texas A&M than at Florida State, where they got three guys that are all underclassmen. Francois is a redshirt junior, but there, you know, all these guys have multiple years of eligibility left, and you know, it'll be harder for him to play immediately. So I think those are the major factors. As for the quarterback starter next year, I've been very candid, or as candid as I can be, about Francois' limitations in terms of leadership and off the field. Stuff that I can't say that I won't say. I've been told stuff that there's some water under that bridge in terms of DeAndre, where he has lost the respect of some teammates because of decisions that he's made not to help the football team and to be selfish. And if he doesn't earn back that trust, if he doesn't win the locker room over and prove that he's the best quarterback for the job in that department, in the leadership department, then he's not going to be the starter. And I'm not convinced that he's significantly better than what Blackman would be as a sophomore. So, you know, that's going to be a question. And Blackman has the trust of the locker room and is a natural leader. So I think that puts the balance in his favor. Plus, he's going to be going through a full spring, whereas Francois, not so much. He's going to be limited, doing some 7-on-7 stuff as he continues to rehab. So he's going to have, if Francois wins the job, it's going to be a good sign that he actually got things right and that'll be a very positive sign for Florida State. I also would not rule out Bailey Hockman. You know, Hockman, if he'd have been healthy last year when the time came, when Francois got hurt, if he'd have been healthy, he might have been the guy to go. But as things stand, he's a guy that he's gonna work. He's gonna do the necessary things to have the respect of the locker room. He's gonna make the right decisions, and he's capable of making the downfield throws that you have to make in Willie Taggart's system. So I'm not willing to pick a quarterback at this point in the race. I'll just say that Taggart is going to put the screws to these guys. I mean, I was told very, very early on after he took the position that they're going to be really demanding, that these guys, they think, you know, things were bad because Jimbo yelled at him. Well, Jimbo yelled at him a lot, but he didn't always hold him accountable. He's like, they're going to learn the flip side of that. They're not going to get yelled at. Taggart, generally speaking, isn't going to really yell at his quarterbacks, but the severity of consequences can be much larger. It's not always the guy that yells at you that you want to be afraid of. It's not the dog that barks the loudest that you want to be afraid of. And I was told very, very early on that Taggart is going to hold these guys accountable, and they're going to learn really quickly that his expectations and how he expects them to go to work every day is going to be a bit of a shock. And they're going to have to adjust to that. And the guys that adjust to that best, they're going to be the ones that play. And that's going to be true at the quarterback position, especially. All right, I'm going to go ahead and wrap it here for this portion of the mailbag. I'm going to have actually parts 2 and 3 of the mailbag coming up very soon. Should be releasing within the next day or so. So this also, there's going to be plenty of room for some additional questions. If you have additional questions pertaining to Florida State football, go ahead and send them on my way, and I'll do the best that I can to get those in here on one of the next few mailbags. Once again, I want to thank Luis Marquez for his sponsorship of the show. That is Luis Marquez from Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida. Not just a realtor, but one of the best realtors and a trained photographer and videographer, which if you list a home, you definitely want someone who is trained to make your home look as good as possible online, to set you up with the best possible online marketing plan. Nobody's going to make your home look better for prospective home buyers, including smooth professional walkthrough video. And if you are thinking about listing your house, you need to give Lewis a call. Information in the show notes. Mention that you heard about him through the Unconquered podcast, and he'll include a free warranty on the home that covers repairs and replacements through the listing period. And if you're in the market to buy a home in the greater Jacksonville area, you need to go through Lewis. Nobody's going to outwork the guy. I know that for a fact. Listen, he was an assistant manager at the Pickup Publix in Tallahassee. If you can be a manager at that store, you know how to work. So once again, give Lewis a call. Let him know that you heard about him from the Unconquered podcast. Definitely helps out a bunch. So we'll go ahead and wrap it there. Once again, this has been the Unconquered podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much, and have a great day if you want to.
I made this.